Asia and the Middle East. Lands, 47. Population, 4,194,127,075. Publishers, 664,650. Bible studies, 629,729. Two questions they could not answer. In an Asian land where our work is restricted, a 24-year-old man accepted a Bible study to prove that witness teachings were wrong and that his Catholic beliefs were right. He soon realized, however, that Jehovah's Witnesses were teaching the truth. When his family found out that he was studying the Bible, they summoned him to a family meeting and pressured him to return to the Catholic Church. Because the young man refused, his family assembled all their relatives in the village to force him to abandon his new beliefs. Even though they beat him, the man did not compromise. His family then reported him to the priest, who brought him before the parish council. The man told the council that he would return to the church if the priest could answer two questions. What is God's name? Why does the church allow its members to eat blood when the Bible forbids it? Unable to answer either question, the priest slapped the young man in the face in order to, as the priest put it, exorcise the demon inside him. The meeting then ended. After that, the man's family gathered all their friends to force him to kneel before an image of Mary. Although they beat him again, he refused to compromise. At that, the family arranged for an attractive girl to tell him that she would marry him if he returned to the church. The young man told her that he would return if she could answer the two questions that he had posed to the priest. The girl left and never returned. Finally, after being held against his will for 7 months, the man escaped from the village and returned to the city, where he contacted the brothers. 1 month later, he became an unbaptized publisher. He was baptized at a circuit assembly in March 2011. Prison official defends sister. A regular pioneer sister was visiting her son, who was imprisoned for Christian neutrality in South Korea. While in the waiting room, she handed a tract to a man sitting beside her. The man then shouted at her, saying, "Why do you people of this false religion preach even in this place?" The man's ranting drew the attention of the 30 or 40 visitors in the room. At that, an official of the prison spoke up and scolded the man, saying, "These are people of the true religion. All the other religions are false. I have watched these people for many years while working at this prison, and I have come to realize that they are the only ones who truly practice what they are taught." The abusive man was silenced. Writing on the wall. When Harindra started his Bible study, he had been living alone for 10 years because he had gone to work in a large city in Nepal in order to feed and support his family back in the village. The man was illiterate, so a witness studied the Bible with him using the brochure Enjoy Life on Earth Forever. Since this brochure was not available in Nepali at the time, they used an English one. One day, the man's wife came from the village to visit him. She was surprised to see her husband studying an English brochure. Additionally, he had stopped drinking and did not beat her anymore. Learning that all these changes were a result of Harindra's Bible study, she began to study the Bible and attend the meetings in her village. Harindra desired to learn more about Jehovah, so he decided to learn how to read and write. He asked his Bible study conductor to write Nepali letters on pieces of paper, which he stuck on the walls of his room until there was no space left. He then practiced reading all the new words and letters until slowly he learned to read. In time, he arranged for his family to come and live with him in the city so that they could all worship Jehovah together. Within 2 years, he got baptized. Now Harindra and his family attend the meetings together, and he handles Bible reading assignments in the Theocratic Ministry School. He says, "Our life has dramatically improved thanks to Jehovah's education." Not for $200,000. Tsar Hanum, who lives in Azerbaijan, was very deeply involved in the practice of Spiritism. For 15 years, she was considered to have powers of extrasensory perception and the ability to tell fortunes. People also believed that she had the ability to remove spells and heal. Tsar Hanum was famous, and many of her clients, being high-ranking officials and their wives, paid between $2,000 and $4,000 for a seance. Consequently, she became wealthy. Although having spiritistic powers, she herself felt spiritually impoverished, and many questions troubled her. Her marriage fell apart, and she lacked a purpose in life. One day, while desperately pouring out her troubles to God, she heard a knock on her door. She opened the door, and two sisters began witnessing to her. Tsar Hanum was moved when she heard them speak about pleasing God not only in word, but also in deed. She knew many religious people whose deeds were far from godly. She was also aware that the Spiritism she practiced was a sin. She agreed to a Bible study. In time, she started to pray using Jehovah's name and saw how he answered her prayers. It was difficult, however, for her to abandon her practices. The demons constantly troubled her and even beat her. Eventually, with Jehovah's help, she broke free from demonic influence and destroyed the many items that connected her to Spiritism and false religion. Soon, Tsar Hanum became a zealous publisher of the Good News, and she was baptized in May 2011. Immediately following her baptism, she applied to serve as an auxiliary pioneer. She had no problem meeting the hour requirement, because even before baptism, she was preaching more than 70 hours a month, despite poor health. 2 months before her baptism, she was offered $200,000 by the wife of a government official to remove a spell. The woman believed that the spell was the cause of the sickness that had resulted in the amputation of her leg. Tsar Hanum refused, and instead sent two witnesses to the hospital to preach the good news to this woman. Our zealous sister has been regularly preaching to her former clients, telling them that what she did before was wrong in God's eyes. As a result, one of them, the very one who had introduced her to the government official's wife, agreed to a Bible study and began attending meetings. Witnessing in jail. In India, two of our sisters were arrested for engaging in the ministry and were sentenced to 5 days in jail. One of them relates, "As soon as we were jailed, police officers asked why we were detained, and this gave us a good opportunity to witness to them. Since we had been brought to the police station directly from the field ministry, we had plenty of magazines and tracts with us. We witnessed to all and placed a lot of literature. We encouraged each other, prayed, and read the publications that we had. Later, we were moved to another jail in the city. Right away, inmates asked us why we were brought in. This gave us the opportunity to tell them what we had been preaching about and to identify ourselves as Jehovah's Witnesses. A female warden overheard us and said, 'You were jailed because you were preaching outside, and now you preach inside the jail.' Our sisters are now planning to follow up by visiting the prisoners who showed an interest in the truth." The policeman noticed the love. Two sisters were preparing to witness in some small shops in Bethlehem. Suddenly, two women rushed up and excitedly asked them in Spanish if they were Jehovah's Witnesses. The women were witnesses from Mexico visiting Israel with a tour group, and they had recognized the literature that the sisters were holding. The four hugged, kissed, took photos, and exchanged addresses. After that, the Mexican sisters rejoined their tour group, and the two local sisters proceeded to visit the shops. A few hours later, a police officer approached the local sisters and asked if they were Spanish. The sisters said that they were not. The police officer said that he had been watching when the four met and thought they must have all been long-lost friends or from the same family. The sisters explained that they were all Jehovah's Witnesses, and that even when Jehovah's Witnesses are from different countries or have never met before, they feel like family because they have love among themselves. The policeman was so impressed that he took literature and asked where he could get more information about this religion. A return visit was arranged. There just may be someone. Yusuke is a young pioneer serving in an English group in Japan. One day he learned that the next morning a cruise ship would be docking with passengers from many countries. So he got up early and, despite heavy rain, drove 2 hours to the port at Nagasaki. As he stood alone on the quay in the rain, many of the disembarking passengers mistook him for a guide and approached him. This misunderstanding enabled Yusuke to place 70 magazines and 50 brochures in several languages within half an hour. He went back to his car to get more literature, and when he returned, he saw a young male passenger standing alone. When Yusuke approached him, the young man asked in English, "Are you one of Jehovah's Witnesses?" When Yusuke confirmed that he was, the man began to sob. Yusuke took him to a cafe where they could talk. The young man, Jason, was 21 years old. He explained that his parents were active in the truth and that until his late teens, he had been an unbaptized publisher. About 6 months earlier, he had stopped associating with Jehovah's Witnesses and had embarked on a cruise to a number of Asian countries, reasoning that in Asia he would not meet them. Because he developed an upset stomach, however, he had not been able to disembark in Thailand, Vietnam, or Taiwan. The first place he got off the ship was Japan, and the first person to speak to him was one of Jehovah's Witnesses. Jason's immediate thought was, "I can never run away from Jehovah," and that was why he had begun to weep. There in the cafe, Yusuke discussed some paragraphs from the God's Love book with Jason to assure him that Jehovah still loved him. Yusuke implored Jason not to leave the organization. Sadly, they had very little time together. Jason's ship left that same evening for Incheon, South Korea, where Jason had planned several days of sightseeing. Yusuke wondered what more he could do to help Jason, and remembered a brother he had met at an international convention in South Korea. The brother spoke English and lived in Incheon. That night, Yusuke telephoned him. Of course, Jason knew nothing of this connection. As Jason left the ship the next morning, he saw a big sign, "Welcome to Korea, Jason!" It was held up by 5 smiling witnesses. Jason canceled all his sightseeing plans and spent time with the brothers. Hearing firsthand the experiences of young brothers his age being imprisoned for their faith moved him deeply. He also attended the memorial there. Jason returned to the United States, became an active publisher again, and asked the elders to study with him 4 times a week. He completed studying the Bible Teach and God's Love books and qualified for baptism. He was baptized 107 days after Yusuke first spoke to him. The following month, he auxiliary pioneered. Yusuke recalls that on that cold, wet morning, he had a strong urge to go all the way to Nagasaki, even though there was no one to go with him. He had reasoned, "There just may be someone there who will listen."